of commercial.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
There are times when we have to stand up tall, stand up firm. This is the time to stand up as one people. All of us walk together, united, march together until freedom for Palestine and freedom for all of us. Because as Nelson Mandela said, South Africa's freedom is incomplete without the freedom of Palestine. All of our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of Palestine.
As Gaza solidarity protests continue around the world and students walk out of graduations in the United States, Israel expands its offensive. More than 360,000 Palestinians have now fled Rafah. Officials warn Gaza's health system could collapse within hours. We'll speak with Palestinian ambassador to the United Kingdom, Hassan Zumla, who says the United States is shielding Israel's war crimes. Then in Florida, family members of 23-year-old airman Roger Fortson demand justice after a police officer went to the wrong apartment and shot Fortman almost immediately as he opened the door.
So to the sheriff department that took my gift, that had so many accolades inside of him, to err is human and to forgive is divine. I need you guys to tell the truth about my son.
We'll speak with the family's attorney, Ben Crump. Then to New York. We'll look at the police killing of Wynn Rosario. The 19-year-old teen called 911 himself in a mental health crisis asking for help. When police came, they shot him dead in front of his mother and brother.
The people that's supposed to serve and protect us are the ones that's killing us. The police were so aggressive and reckless that they could have killed my mom and me, too, in our own house.
That and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel is intensifying its attacks across the Gaza Strip from Rafah to Jabalia, the largest refugee camp in Gaza. The official death toll has now topped 35,000, including more than 14,500 children. According to the United Nations, more than 360,000 Palestinians have fled Rafah, despite fears there's nowhere to go to escape the Israeli bombardment.
There's no safe place. The situation is very hard. There's no food, no drinks. Even the water is hard to get. My children cry and tell me, "Mother, we want to drink." And like everyone else who left Rafah and came here, and we are displaced here, but there's no safe place. The situation is really hard.
Palestinian health officials are warning the entire system in Gaza is hours from collapse due to a massive fuel shortage following Israel's seizure of the Rafah border crossing. Over the weekend, Israel ordered the forced evacuation of the Kuwaiti hospital in Rafah. Israel's attack on Rafah faces growing international condemnation. On Sunday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Israel should, quote, get out of Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel's advance on northern Gaza is forcing many displaced Palestinians in Gaza City to flee again.
What happened with us is that the Israeli forces dropped flyers on us to evacuate the camp as there will be strikes. We left the camp, but we don't know where to go. We don't know where to head. We don't have food or drink or clothes. What do they want from us? They're killing us and our children. Shame on them. What shall we do? We're staying on the streets. This is just so unjust. Have some mercy on us, Arabs, Muslims, Americans. Have mercy on us. We're being slaughtered. Shame on you. We're all being killed. Shame on you. Why are you doing this to us?
Pro-Palestinian students staged protests at college graduation ceremonies across the United States over the weekend. At Duke University, scores of students walked out of comedian Jerry Seinfeld's commencement address. At the University of California, Berkeley, Saturday's commencement ceremony was interrupted a number of times by students. A day earlier at the UC Berkeley Law commencement, eight students wore shirts spelling out the phrase, UC divest. In other news from California, riot police made one arrest outside Pomona College's commencement event, which was moved after students set up a Gaza solidarity encampment on the main graduation stage. Meanwhile, at Virginia Commonwealth University, scores of students staged a silent Gaza walkout during Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin's commencement address. As the police crackdown continues on student protests. On Friday, police raided an encampment at the University of Pennsylvania, arresting at least 33 protesters. In Cambridge, Massachusetts, police arrested 10 students who had relaunched an encampment at MIT. Police have now made nearly 3,000 arrests at student-led protests over the past month. Meanwhile, the trustees at the Union Theological Seminary, which is affiliated with Columbia University, have voted to divest from, quote, substantially and intractably benefiting from the war in Palestine, unquote. In related news, students at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore have ended their two-week-old encampment after school officials agreed to consider divesting from Israel. On the international front, professors at the University of Amsterdam are staging a walkout today. This comes a week after police used a bulldozer to violently break up a student Gaza encampment. A new report by the U.S. State Department has concluded Israel likely used U.S. weapons in violation of U.S. and international law, but the report claims the Biden administration has not yet found specific instances that could force the U.S. to withhold military aid. The findings came in a report issued Friday to Congress. Former State Department official Josh Paul, who resigned over Biden's Gaza policy, criticized what he described as a self-contradictory report.
It does say that it is reasonable to assume that U.S. weapons have been used to commit violations of international humanitarian law, and yet it does not say that Israel has violated international humanitarian law. It does say that Israel has restricted humanitarian assistance into Gaza, and yet it says that currently Israel is not restricting U.S.-funded humanitarian assistance in Gaza, which is an absurd thing to say, given that the IDF is at this moment closing and has closed for several days the Rafah crossing point, which is the main entry point for humanitarian assistance.
The United Nations General Assembly voted 143-9 Friday in support of Palestine becoming a full UN member. 25 countries abstained from the vote. The United States and Israel both voted against the measure. The vote grants new rights and privileges to Palestine, but not full UN membership, which requires support from the UN Security Council. Last month, the U.S. vetoed a Palestine statehood resolution at the Security Council. On Friday, Palestinian Ambassador Riyad Mansour urged nations to support Palestine becoming a state.
A yes vote is a vote for Palestinian existence. It is not against any state, but it is against the attempts to deprive us of our state.
Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, protested the vote by shredding a copy of the UN Charter at the podium.
You are shredding the UN Charter with your own hands. Yes, yes, that's what you're doing, shredding the UN Charter.
Shame in another development, Egypt has announced it will join South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. Three Israeli whistleblowers who worked at a military detention camp in the Negev Desert have detailed to CNN horrific abuse faced by Gazans detained October 7th. One whistleblower shared photographs that show Palestinians being strapped down, blindfolded, and held in diapers at the site. Doctors have been forced to amputate the limbs of some prisoners due to injuries sustained from constant handcuffing. One whistleblower said they beat Palestinians not to gather intelligence, but out of revenge. In other news from Israel, protests against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his war cabinet are continuing as Israel marks its first Memorial Day since the October 7th attacks. Earlier today, relatives of dead soldiers heckled Israel's far-right National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir as he spoke at a military cemetery. On Saturday, relatives of hostages held in Gaza staged another protest in Tel Aviv. Naama Weinberg is the cousin of Itay Sversky, who reportedly died in captivity.
It is because of Netanyahu that there is no hostage release deal and there are no hostages being brought back home. He is abandoning our families to their death for his own political interests. Entering Rafah and expanding the operations there are both hinder the hostages' release negotiation and put the hostages' lives in grave danger. So long as Netanyahu is in power, the hostages will not return. Them to return.
In other international news, Russian President Vladimir Putin has removed Sergei Shoigu from defense minister. Shoigu had served in the role since 2012 and had overseen Russia's invasion of Ukraine. He's being replaced by the economist Andrei Belousov. This comes as Russia says it's captured nine more villages in Ukraine's Kharkiv region. In recent days, thousands of Ukrainians have evacuated their homes as Russia expands its attack near the city of Vovchansk. Meanwhile, at least 15 people died in the Russian city of Belgorod after a downed Ukrainian missile hit an apartment building. In Sudan, Doctors Without Borders says two children were killed and others injured overnight Sunday when a bomb fell outside a pediatric hospital in the western city of El Fasher, the capital of North Darfur. Also on Sunday were reports of another 27 deaths there as the Sudanese army clashed with the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces, as fears mount of possible carnage in the last major stronghold of the army. Some 800,000 internally displaced people have taken refuge in Al-Fashir, which was once thought to be relatively shielded from the war. A Tunisian lawyers' association has called for a nationwide strike after mass police officers raided Tunisia's Bar Association offices and arrested a prominent lawyer. Sonia Damani is an outspoken of the Tunisian president, Kais Saied, and said in a TV interview last week half of Tunisia's youth want to leave Tunisia. She was being questioned about black African migrants who have spilled from Tunisia. Damani's arrest was captured on a live French news broadcast as a reporter was covering her persecution by the government. Two journalists were also arrested Saturday as part of the ongoing crackdown on dissent. On Sunday, protesters took to the streets of Tunis. This is Ahmed Najib Chebbi, head of the Opposition Alliance.
Today, people are being arrested for anything, absolutely anything. On top of all that, we are undermining the upcoming elections. Tunisia will be on the brink of crisis and collapse. Therefore, we advocate for holding the elections on the scheduled date, ensuring they are conducted within the framework of freedom and equal opportunity.
In Afghanistan, flash floods have killed at least 315 people in northern villages. Another 1,600 have been injured, and thousands of homes have been destroyed or damaged, as have health facilities and essential infrastructure.
The flash floods destroyed our homes. I lost 13 members of my family, including women and children. So many livestock have been destroyed as well. We have no food, no drinking water, no shelter, no blankets, nothing at all. The floods have destroyed everything. Out of 42 houses, only two or three houses remained. The floods have destroyed the entire valley.
The affected area is in dire need of assistance, but Afghanistan has seen its international aid slash following the Taliban takeover in 2021. In Indonesia, flooding and mudslides in West Sumatra killed at least 43 people over the weekend, over a dozen others missing. The monsoon downpours also triggered cold lava flow, a thick mixture of volcanic ash and other debris. In Canada, over 100 active wildfires are burning, prompting evacuation orders in British Columbia and Alberta. Authorities in Minnesota issued the state's first air quality alert of the year Sunday as wildfire smoke drifted across the border. In Spain, the ruling Socialist Party won a majority of seats in Catalan elections Sunday, in a major upset for the region's separatist movement. If the socialists can forge a ruling coalition with other parties, it'll be the first Catalan government in over a decade led by a party which does not support independence. Former President Donald Trump will be back in court today for the fourth week of witness testimony in his criminal hush money and election interference trial. Trump's former fixer, attorney Michael Cohen, is set to testify today. Meanwhile, the New York Times and ProPublica have revealed Trump could be forced to pay more than $100 million to the IRS for improperly claiming tax write-offs on a Chicago skyscraper by writing off the same losses twice. And jury selection begins today in the corruption trial of New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez. He's accused of taking bribes to benefit Egypt and Qatar. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. When we come back, more than 360,000 have now fled Rafah as Israel expands its offensive in Gaza amidst worldwide protests. We'll speak with the Palestinian ambassador to the United Kingdom, who says the United States is shielding Israel's war crimes. Back in 20 seconds. Stranger Cared About Me by Jawahar Shofani. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel is intensifying its war across the Gaza Strip as the official death toll has now topped 35,000, including more than 14,500 children. According to the United Nations, more than 360,000 Palestinians have now fled the southern city of Rafah, despite fears there's nowhere safe to escape the Israeli bombardment. This comes as the United Nations General Assembly voted 143-9 Friday in support of Palestine becoming a full UN member. 25 countries abstained from the vote. The United States and Israel both voted against the measure. The vote grants new rights and privileges to Palestine, but it can't become a full UN member without support from the UN Security Council. Last month, the U.S. vetoed a Palestine statehood resolution at the Security Council. For more, we're going to London to speak with the Palestinian ambassador to the United Kingdom, Hossam Zumlot. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Ambassador. Thanks so much for being with us. Let's start in Gaza, with Israel intensifying the bombardment of Rafah. 360,000 Palestinians now moving out of Rafah, where so many of them had already fled to. Can you describe the situation on the ground? As we speak, we hear that the Kuwaiti hospital has been ordered to evacuate, with staff saying they don't want to leave their patients.
There are no words, Amy, to describe the situation in Rafah, in Gaza. What is it? Horrific? Armageddon? I mean, people have been targeted for 7 months. Some of them had to leave five times, seven times, 10 times, including family members of mine. And I know what they have gone through. And not only the displacement, not only the slaughterhouse that they have gone through, but there is nowhere to go. There is nowhere safe. Fathers, mothers are thinking about their children right now. I mean, it's indescribable. And it's obvious Israel has decided to go on. They are not going to end this war without a serious pressure. And many are telling us, you know, Israel doesn't have a military plan. Israel doesn't have a political plan. Well, Israel does have a plan. And Israel is executing the plan with almost perfection. And the plan is genocide. And the plan is the mass expulsion of the Palestinian, a repeat of the Nakba of 1948, which we are commemorating this very month in May. Otherwise, nothing of what Israel is doing makes sense. So the situation is horrendous, horrendous in every sense of the word.
President Biden said he's withholding a shipment of weapons, bombs that could be used in Gaza as the Rafah ground invasion is threatened. Your response to this, Ambassador, do you feel that President Biden is shifting his position?
Well, it's a very important step, and it did break a taboo, a U.S. taboo, and we must build on this. But it is 100,000 people killed and maimed late, and we need to make sure that this is not just a pause, but this is an arms embargo, that the U.S. does fulfill its commitment under international law by making sure that its weapon does not end up in violation of international law. And it is absolutely bluntly clear, particularly after the ruling of the International Court of Justice, that's the highest court of the land, of the globe, clear ruling whereby they officially put Israel on trial for genocide, ruling that it is plausible that Israel is committing genocide. And therefore, there is no conversation after that. Every third party that does provide Israel, genocidal Israel, with weapons, especially these 2,000 pounds bombs that are not supposed to be used in civilian areas like Gaza, especially those and many other weapons, we should see an arms embargo now, and we should build on that step, that small step taken by the U.S. president. And I assure you, if Netanyahu was certain that there will be an arms embargo, he wouldn't have gone through Rafah. He wouldn't have crossed that American red line. But he knows pressure in the U.S. by some of his allies will mount, and that this pause in the shipment of these lethal weapons might actually resume soon.
We got word on Friday that the State Department had concluded Israel likely used U.S. weapons in violation of U.S. and international law. But the report claims the Biden administration has not yet found specific instances that could force the U.S. to withhold military aid. Your response, Ambassador?
I think the U.S. here is mincing their words, dodging responsibility, delaying the inevitable, and not having the guts and the will, the political will, to do what is right. And this has been the story with the U.S. for a long time, for decades, Amy. And that's why we are where we are today. The U.S. knows very well. The legal assessment is bluntly clear. Israel not only violated international law, Israel has bombed international law, has bombed the U.N., UN premises and what have you. And then when Israel came up with these allegations against UNRWA, the U.S. was absolutely clear, or at least quick, to suspend funding from the organization that deals with the humanitarian side of Gaza, of the West Bank, of Palestinian refugees. In general, the U.S. policy vis-a-vis Palestine is inconsistent, contradictory. It does not make sense. It doesn't add up. The U.S. has been saying for all along that it wants a two-state solution. And when we go to the U.N. seeking U.N. membership, you know, they veto it in the Security Council and they vote against it in the General Assembly. And why? If you really believe in a two-state solution, why do you do so unless you really don't? And all what you're doing is just buying time, giving cover for Israel to finish off its job. This is very disingenuous in the part of the U.S. administration, extremely disingenuous and very counterproductive. Because what's the end game? Israel will not be able to kill all Palestinians. They will not be able to finish us off. So what's the end game with doing that? The U.S. says humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza, they want to see help, and then they still defund UNRWA and so forth. So doesn't make sense. And I believe this is a moment when the last 7 months have unmasked beyond doubt, many things, including the hypocrisy, selectivity, double standards of certain international actors. And I believe the U.S. administration is right at the top of that list of not really being consistent with its own responsibilities as a founding member of the international legal system. And we have been following some letters by senior U.S. officials and senators threatening the ICC, threatening judges, global judges, literally using words in their letters like "you have been warned." You know, that reminds me of the Sopranos, a mafia-like threatening of courts, of international courts that we created after the horrors of the Second World War to make sure that never again, to make sure that everybody who commits war crimes is held accountable to international legality. You're threatening judges, imposing sanctions on international courts, on the ICC, only to shield a government and the military that is committing genocide and is on trial for genocide. So, and we are also following letters by also senators pressuring the U.S. president not to go ahead with the pause of the arms shipment to Israel. And therefore, yes, this is a time when we are following everybody. We will not forget. We will not forget. We will not forget those who stood firm against the genocide, stood firm with international legality and international law, and those who are literally ransacking our humanity and ransacking our international
system. Ambassador Hossam Zumlaut, you are joining us from London. You're the Palestinian ambassador to Britain. The Foreign Office there is investigating a claim by Hamas that a British Israeli hostage, Nadav Popplewell, has died in Gaza, died about a month ago. Hamas has said that Nadav Popplewell succumbed to wounds from an Israeli airstrike about a month ago. His mother was released months ago. She was also a hostage. Can you tell us what you know at this point?
I really don't have information about this, Amy, whatsoever. But all loss of life is heartbreaking, regrettable. All hostages from both sides must be released and returned safely. And I repeat, from both sides, because Israel has taken thousands of our people hostages without trial, without charge. And you have followed some of the astonishing, heartbreaking reports of the Israeli treatment, Israeli prison guards' treatment of our hostages. A CNN report only last week about the torture, and some of them have actually died under torture, like Dr. Adnan El-Borsh of Gaza, who is world-renowned for being a backbone of the health sector in Gaza. And once he operated 41 operations in one day. And therefore, you know, it is crucial to focus on the what Israel has done to hospitals and to the health sector, of course, also to the education sector. I mean, destroying all and targeting the number of hospitals they did. And, you know, this is important so people in the U.S., Amy, understand. In relative terms, in proportionate terms, if you apply the ratio of those killed and maimed, including children, if you apply the ratio in Gaza of schools, of hospitals to the U.S., let me give you some numbers. About the people who have been killed and maimed in Gaza would make, in the U.S., the equivalence, the equivalence of the same in the U.S. would be 14 million Americans killed and maimed. If it's about only killed, it will be 5 million. If it's about children, there would have been 2.1 million American children killed in the last 7 months. About universities and hospitals, it would be 6,000 American universities destroyed, either in full or in part. It would be 4,000 American hospitals targeted, destroyed, bombed. And it would be 105,000 schools in the U.S., damaged or completely destroyed. So this is the situation. And therefore, in Gaza, you have no way to treat anybody. And the situation has become exactly in line with the original plan, the blueprint of Netanyahu and Israel. Lifeless, a place that you cannot live in. And even if you want to move within it, you have no home to go back to. You have no school to send your children and kids to. You have no hospitals to be treated in. A lifeless territory for the final push of people out of their homeland.
I want to ask you about the United Nations General Assembly vote, 143-9 Friday, in support of Palestinian statehood, Palestine becoming a full UN member. 25 countries abstained. U.S. and Israel both voted against the measure. The vote grants new rights and privileges to Palestine, but not full UN membership, which requires the support of the UN Security Council. Last month, the U.S.